News Talk 680 WPTF. I'm Bill LeMay. If you'd like to join us, very easy thing to do. 860 WPTF 800-662-7979 star 680. We have a couple of folks in the studio right now. Ben Grambo, who is a graduate of University of Michigan with a Bachelor and Master of Science in Nuclear Engineering. He's also currently employed by the largest worldwide vendor for commercial nuclear reactors. And I see that, and first of all, welcome, Ben.
Hi, Bill.
I didn't know there was people who sold those things, so we'll get into that in just a moment. And Morgan Davis is with us, who's a system engineer at Braidwood Power Station. And Morgan, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Well, nuclear power, there's some folks running right now, you know, getting in their shelter, even bringing that up. As you know, the industry has gotten a bit of a knock over the years. I'm not sure if it was the China syndrome or whatever it was. But certainly in this day and age, I mean, it seems to me to be a very logical alternative energy source to go to. I'll start with you, Ben. You've been touring some of the campuses, and you're talking about it, nuclear power. What are you saying?
Well, we're out here trying to raise public awareness and just get the message out about the fact that nuclear power is a very important part of our energy mix in this country today. The fact that it's clean, reliable, and very affordable. Most people don't actually know that there's 104 operating nuclear power plants in this country today, more than any other country in the world.
Well, they're older plants, aren't they? Have there been any new plants lately, Morgan?
There has been no new reactors built right now, but we have upgraded our current plants and uprated them and made sure that we can get more for our money as far as operators in the industry.
There's such an opposition to it, though, and I guess, you know, they talk about waste and a nuclear meltdown and what have you. I mean, some of the most horrific scenarios you'll hear in trying to stop these power plants. But, you know, put the risk factor on if there is. Or, you know, how risky are these plants?
Truth is, the risk of nuclear power plants is extremely low. There are numerous safety systems that are built into these plants. And they take it out of the people's hands such that if there was something to go wrong, that these safety systems automatically function and can contain what's inside the nuclear power plant to really protect the health and well-being of the public.
Can you guys give me a perspective? You got your coal-fired plants, which I guess Beverly Purdue doesn't want built anymore in the state of North Carolina. But in a nuclear power plant, then you have wind and all the other alternative sources out there. What does the nuclear power plant produce? Can you give me a comparison compared to, let's say, a coal-fired plant?
Sure. So for a coal-fired power plant versus nuclear, basically both power plants are generating heat so that they can heat water, turn it to steam, and then spin a turbine. And that turbine is what generates electricity. So the real difference is, what is your fuel source to generate that heat? With a coal-fired power plant, you burn coal. And with a nuclear power plant, you use uranium. You split the atom, and that heats up the water.
Mm-hmm. So you're putting, when you talk about clean environment, you're putting the coal-fired plant, for instance, is putting stuff in the air that some people might think is a problem. And what does it put in the air? Anything?
Actually, the only thing that a nuclear plant would potentially put in the air would be water steam, and that's just from the cooling process. We emit no greenhouse gases whatsoever.
Yeah, but what do you do with this waste?
Well, the waste right now is actually very well managed at each power plant right now. As soon as we use the waste, it's these assemblies we pull out of the core. We put them in a basically like a swimming pool type of structure, and they stay there until the radioactivity of these assemblies is, you know, at a level where we can manage them. And then we also put them in, after that, we take them out and put them in these dry storage containers, and they're contained outside right now at each of the plants in these huge containers, and they're just concrete containers out there ready for a repository or interim storage area.
You know, you work for the largest commercial nuclear reactor vendor. I'm sorry, I never knew such a thing existed, but obviously nuclear power is something that a lot of countries around the world have hung their hat on.
Absolutely. There's over 400 reactors worldwide, and there's a lot of countries outside of the United States right now that are actually actively building new plants. They're building plants in Finland and in France, constructing several plants in China as we speak.
So what kind of reaction have you guys gotten on the college? You know, you're at Duke. I think you're going to NC State next and UNC. So let me go to you, Pat. What are you hearing from the folks? Because normally, I don't know. I envision that college kids probably aren't real nuclear friendly, but I could be wrong.
I wouldn't say that they're unfriendly. It's just it's a matter of education. And regardless of whether it's a college student or just someone in the general public, with the more they learn about nuclear power and actually find out what the facts are versus what they may have heard from their friends or what their general perception is before they learn more about it, When you hear the facts and what the benefits are, people are generally very receptive. Right now, as far as public opinion nationwide, nuclear power is at its highest level of public opinion with over 70% approval rating. And when it comes to communities that actually have these power plants in them, where the people there realize the local jobs they provide and the type of tax base that's available to local communities, there's over 90% approval. And that's where the people want to build Duke plants, is where there's one already.
Well, I'd love to see it here. There's no question. I think Duke has applied for an opportunity to build some more.
As Progress Energy.
Progress Energy, mm-hmm. Yeah. But you run across these folks that, and they seem to, and it seems to be a minority, that tend to muck up the system for everybody else. They have that legal authority to do so.
And I think that's one reason why we're here today, is to portray the message that it's clean and it's safe and it's reliable. And it's definitely an answer to some of the pinches we've faced in our pocketbooks. And also, it's a good way to manage the greenhouse gas situation, too, that we're experiencing here worldwide.
But Duke and Progress and other companies have a difficult time with the litigation that oftentimes, revolves around them wanting to build a plant, right?
Well, but there's a process, and it's an important process for people to air concerns about a potential project coming out in the future. And there's a lot of regulations that the government sets out as far as how a plant needs to be constructed and how it can be operated in a safe manner. So that's it's an open public discussion between someone that wants to build a power plant versus someone that doesn't. And that process can get vetted out and decision can be made.
All right. Well, if you have questions, we got two individuals that can answer them for you. 860-WPTF, 800-662-79.
I have a question. Senator Obama, if elected president, wants to build like a few million electric...
You're breaking up on us. What was it?
Senator Obama wants to build like a few million vehicles if elected president. How's that going to affect us as far as these nuclear plants? Will we be able to support them?
Did you catch the question?
I think the question was Senator Obama supports plug-in hybrids or more electric cars in the future.
Is that right,
yes.
Phil?
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Well, how will that affect our power grid?
Well, that would certainly represent an increase in electricity needs over what the country uses today. Right now, the federal government's projecting that by 2030, there will be a 25% increase in our electricity consumption in this company. So right now, the country needs to plan for adding future kinds of generation and have a good mix. So we need lots of power that's able to come on and be available 24/7, and nuclear power does that.
Well, that's the thing. I want my laptop to work 24/7, and I fear that some of the mindset is, and I don't mind conserving. I really don't, but a lot of the power companies now, because of state legislators, have been kind of forced into this, all right, we need renewable energy source, we need to have a certain percentage of conservation. But ultimately, that doesn't give us the kind of energy we need in the future. Am I right?
Well, I think the important thing, too, is definitely to pursue those renewables, right? We need to develop those. We need to get those going. But the biggest problem we're going to have going forward is just base load energy. And right now, the only things that do that for us is coal, nuclear, and hydro. And, out of all three of those, obviously, hydro is a great option, but nuclear, you can produce so much power with such little, like a little uranium pellet can produce so much energy compared to the resources you have to put in to the other kinds of energy.
Just so people understand, when these reactors, you fuel them and then you run them continuously for 18 to 24 months, depending on what type of reactor it is, as opposed to other sources of energy that maybe only operate when the wind blows or produce electricity when the sun shines. Or even as we use natural gas, where they only run it part of the day.
Do you see anything in the future, as we have this debate about energy in this country, we have the oil and the drilling and then all the other things. Is there anything out there in 10 years that could be the answer, other than nuclear, for instance, and coal, in order to generate the power that we're going to need?
When you look at it from just the amount of electricity that's needed, nuclear has to play an important role in that. There's going to be continued investment in renewables such as biomass, wind, and solar, and the percentage of our electricity that's generated by those is going to go up. But today, it's only about 2% of our electricity. So even if we had a five-fold increase, that still is only 10%, and it's not going to be enough soon enough to meet the demand.
I think also, too, going forward, we do need to stress conservation, one, you know, more efficient products that the American people are buying. And then also we need to not just rely on one energy source. We need to diversify our portfolio so we're not stuck in a situation where we're dependent just on fossil fuels or just on coal. Like, we need to definitely diversify it so we have more options going forward.
All right. Do you guys have to split at 4:30, or can you hang for another segment? Can you?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Bob, Rick, Tim, Sam, if you can hang on through the break, and I'd appreciate it as well, because, you know, this, again, is one of those issues. I think oftentimes it's framed by, I don't know, movies and a lot of myths, and we don't fully understand, you know, for instance, what nuclear power is and what it's capable of doing and how safe it is and what the downsides are, too, certainly. And these two individuals are willing to hang. And if you want to weigh in, 860-WPTF, 800-662. So, Sam, you're up. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, Sam. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. I'd like to thank you for being here. I'm just getting, I don't know if everybody else is, but I'm so fed up with my electric bill, and I welcome nuclear power or more of it. Every time I conserve, they go up on the kilowatt hour, price per kilowatt hour. So I'd like to know, what is it going to cost us to, you know, how much nuclear waste will be a result of these plants, and about, you know, how much is it going to cost for us to ship it to a nuclear junkyard, so to speak?
Well, actually, the waste that we have and the waste that will be generated in the future is very minimal. You can fit it in a football field about 7 feet deep, and that's for all 104 reactors in the whole United States with 30 years of operation. So it's a very small amount to begin with. Second of all, before we even built the plants, we have a certain amount of funds set aside for taking care of the waste from the get-go, from the beginning. And that is paid to the Department of Energy to help us manage the waste. Now, right now, the waste is on site at each of the power plants, and we do manage that. And it really is no extra cost at this time for anything. And hopefully in the future, you know, for all the Yucca Mountain funds, those are already set aside, and they just haven't been released yet from the government due to policy. But we're hoping in the future that will happen very soon, or in the near term.
Well, let me ask, because I see France has got 80% of their power supplied by nuclear, and the waste products in France, it's so small. I want to say it's like it's very small though compared to here. What's the difference?
Well, one of the things that they do in France is they actually recycle or reprocess the fuel. They're able to take the fuel after it comes out of the reactor. And actually, there's quite a bit of energy left in the fuel after it comes out of the reactor. They separate it, process it chemically, and then they're able to make more fuel out of it. And then they take out some of the waste parts of it, and they're able to package it much more efficiently in a much smaller volume and reuse that energy.
Give us a visual for somebody, just an individual. If we lived our life and we got our power solely from nuclear, what kind of waste are we generating as an individual? What's our footprint?
Well, you could say that from a nuclear fuel standpoint, about the size of a golf ball is about how much uranium fuel would be necessary to power one person for their lifetime of energy.
That's absolutely incredible. And absolutely incredible.
That also is reduced by 90%. That golf ball is reduced by 90% just from recycling the fuel. So we can even reduce it smaller than a golf ball.
Oh, really?
For
that's the old way.
Yeah, that's the old way. And unfortunately, we don't recycle in this country.
How come we don't recycle?
Well, that was a political decision that was made back in the 70s, and something that people are looking at today and may change.
So you could take that golf ball and take it down by what? Wow, that's just absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. I don't know why people aren't jumping all over this. Let's go over to Rick. Rick, welcome to WPTF.
Thank you. How y'all doing?
Doing great.
Good. I worked in the power plant industry, nuclear industry, for about 12 years doing inspection work, construction, and in-service inspection. Of course, I stopped that in 1986 when they quit building more power plants. But I was always wondering why they didn't build smaller plants, because there was such a cost of building a tremendously large plant. I guess I understand why they did, because they could sell power outside the area. But you could get them out of the ground online and in service a whole lot faster building smaller plants. And also why they don't build plants that are more uniform. It seems to me they have a lot more design flaws and problems if they kept the designs uniform as opposed to having so many different designs. Could you comment on that?
Go ahead.
Sure. There's two parts that, you know, first you said the smaller size plants, and you're right. There is a large cost up front to build these plants. It basically takes a lot of money to build the plant and all the safety systems that work with it. But once you turn the plant on, running the plant and producing the electricity is very, very cheap. It's a small cost. So most of your cost is up front. And it's simply an economy of scale type of thing. Actually, the bigger the plant you build, the cheaper it is in the long run. So building a bunch of little small plants is actually not as cost effective as building a smaller number of large plants.
All right. Appreciate it, Rick. What is the cost as you compare a coal fire plant to a nuclear plant? You know, I'm seeing, and I don't know if it's because of the natural resources itself that's becoming mm-hmm. limited, or the fact that we're not building enough power plants, but the electric bill continues to rise.
One thing that's great about nuclear power is the cost of fuel is actually very small in the actual production of the energy. So when you have fossil-based energy, coal and gas, and even natural gas is very volatile to the actual market price. So we're able to pass on our cost savings with nuclear power because, as you know, all the other sources of energy are rising, ours stays pretty consistent. Mm-hmm. So we're able to maintain our competitiveness in the market.
Look at the price of coal today. It's $140 a ton. It's up more than double just over a year. And as an effect, the United States is exporting coal to China right now. Nuclear power is something that we have here in the United States, and it can be part of our energy independence, so we don't have to rely on other nations to get our energy.
Man, it's sounding win-win to me. There's got to be a downside. It doesn't look like there is. Let's go over to Dan. Dan, welcome to the show.
I was sort of apropos to today's discussion. I was reading an article in the MIT Press, that's the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and a couple of professors there, not professors, pardon me, scientists. You know, my terminology in that field is kind of sketchy, but a gentleman by the name of Nasera and what was the guy's name? It doesn't matter. At any rate, they came up with a new process that splits water into its most basic elements, hydrogen and oxygen. And it's about as complicated as an ant farm. And it's, to give you an idea of how simple the whole process is, Jeff Monsignor could probably be selling them next year for you to install in your houses, depending on who wins the copyright war, whoever wins the right to produce it. I mean, you could be buying it at, you know, your home improvement store locally within the next year or so.
So, Dan, I only have 10 seconds. You want to we can get a response on that. Is that your question?
The thing is that it's so new. It wasn't even arrived at until this summer.
Oh, poor Morgan. we have all these chairs for all our very important guests. We have one that's a little dysfunctional, and evidently you got it. It's kind of like musical chairs around here. But Morgan Davis and Ben Grambo is in the studio, and of course, they've been kind enough to spend the hour with us. They're from Clean Energy America, and they've been traveling around to the universities talking about nuclear power. Ben, you were shaking your head yes with our last caller, and he kind of lost me. What was that all about?
I think with the last caller, he was talking about the future of the hydrogen economy and the fact that there is effort and research underway for the generation of reactors that's going to come after the current generation. So we're talking 20, 30 years out. There's going to be a generation of reactors that are going to be very efficient at generating hydrogen. And if the country invests in a distribution infrastructure and the ability to get to a hydrogen economy, that's a portable source of energy that's absolutely emission-free.
He was talking about something I can go plug in like tomorrow. Not there yet?
Not there yet.
Not there. A lot of people working on all kinds of different transportation needs, and I guess the Prius is the one that everybody hears about. But you guys were talking about the Chevy Volt during a break. What's going on with that? What about you?
That's actually a electric car that has has a capability of having a gas or diesel engine included also. And this kind of goes back to the first caller's question about how we're going to make sure we have enough energy to run future technology like the Volt. And I think nuclear power definitely is one of the solutions to that problem, because it's such a big source of baseload energy and it runs 24/7. So, I mean, if somebody wants to plug their car in at night when they come home, you know, after commuting, they can do that, you know, because the sun doesn't need to be shining, you know, for nuclear power to be running. So I think this is a really great way for us to, one, you know, promote clean power and then also get some of those cars off the road also.
Mm-hmm. That's how the Volt's supposed to work. It's 40 miles on its battery. So you drive to work on your little commute, come back, plug it up in the garage. But if you happen to take a longer Sunday drive, it's got an engine to back up that battery.
Well, and the whole thing is, and the whole national debate is, getting ourselves off of oil and everything else. So it looks like, unless something's on the horizon that I'm not seeing, is it's going to be that kind of a thing where you're going to be plugging in batteries to travel to and from. And so it's incredibly important that our power plant, whether it's nuclear or whatever it is in place for
that. And it's going to take leadership, because there's going to be a lot of people that want to go a certain direction, and there's going to be a lot of indecision unless some people stand up and take a stand for things like nuclear power and increasing our use of renewable that don't actually emit carbon dioxide, so that we can protect the environment and ultimately get to energy independence.
Well, guys, I appreciate you for stopping in. I know you have a web page. In fact, it's interactive. If people have questions, you'll be able to answer them. What is it?
It's www.cleanenergy4America.com. And if you have any questions, there is a blog page. All the speakers for Clean Energy America will be posting on there. And if we didn't get to your call today, please definitely check that out. And there's also some more information about nuclear power and some of the benefits of nuclear power on there as well.
All right. Well, Morgan and Ben, thank you so much for spending time with us. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
We'll be back.
Bill LeMay, defender of the American way, 680 WPTF.